Well, good morning, everyone. We are here on this fourth Tuesday of the month on FYI to hopefully elevate your thinking today. I am Andrea Conway, and I am here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And our good friend, Randy Titone.
Good morning, everyone.
The plant-based evangelist.
That's right.
And
bring it on.
We are plant-based OKC.
You mean we're not a part of it?
No, we're not. We're
this is it. We are plant-based OKC. If you are new to tuning into this radio show, we are here every fourth Tuesday to talk about the benefits of eating a whole food, plant-based diet with no added oil and no added sugar, and why we feel that is the healthiest way to eat to prevent and reverse most chronic diseases. We've been talking about this for, gosh, we've been on this show for years now,
That's right. It seems.
So hopefully, if you're new, this is good information for you. If you are if you've been listening to us, some of this may be repeat, but hopefully it'll be still beneficial to you. So a couple things I want to get out there. If during this next hour you are listening and you have any questions at all, we'd be happy to take your call on the air at 672-1220. So please feel free to call in and ask your questions. If you want to know a little bit more about us, we have a website, plantbasedokc.com, and that tells a little bit about our history and our background. And then there's another tab on that same website that says Wellness Events. And so we do hold some free seminars monthly. One of those seminars is held at Community Hospital at 3100 Southwest 89th Street, and we're there one Saturday a month, and we hold a free nutritional seminar that lasts about 3 hours now. We keep adding to it. It gets longer and longer.
She looked at me as she said that.
He likes to talk a lot. but I provide a plant-based lunch at that seminar, and we provide all the science behind why this lifestyle is the best to reverse and prevent chronic disease. And but you do need to RSVP to attend this seminar, and the link in order to RSVP for it is on our website, plantbasedokc.com. Our next seminar is actually July 15th, but it is full, and I will be listing an August date shortly. So if you're interested, please look us up there. And then we are at Rococo Restaurant in North Park Mall on the first Monday of every month. And this is more of a support group meeting. It came about from having our monthly seminars and people that came and listened to the information and wanted to get started down this journey, but still had maybe some questions or wanted to know about recipes and cooking and just different things like that, or meeting other people that are eating this way. And so it really is just an informal get together of people. Rococo Restaurant provides a plant-based menu that you can order from, but that's not required to attend. And we're there to just answer questions and talk with everyone. So we would love to have you attend that as well. And then, of course, we're here on the fourth Tuesday of every month. So let's just kind of dig right in. What I wanted to start talking about today, which is something that I feel like has been in the news recently, is coconut oil. The infamous coconut oil that is supposed to cure all.
Cures Alzheimer's, I believe.
Yes, that's exactly
By
right.
causing death.
Yeah.
So, this just leads to a lot of discussion. I mean, just from a variety of avenues. But we'll start with this. The report I saw was in, I believe, published in the USA Today, and then it got passed around Facebook quite a bit. And it was, the headline is, I don't know why people think coconut oil is healthy. And so it goes on. I want to talk a little bit about what the actual article says. It was written by this guy named Frank Sachs, and he says he has no idea why people think coconut oil is healthy. It's almost 100% fat. past weight loss studies might be responsible. And so he goes on to quote this study, why I think people got this information. It says, the reason coconut oil is so popular for weight loss is partly due to my research on medium-chain triglycerides, says Marie-Pierre Saint-Ange, associate professor of nutritional studies at Columbia University Medical Center. And she told this to Time magazine in April. Coconut oil has a higher proportion of medium-chain triglycerides than most other fats or oils, and my research showed eating these triglycerides may increase the rate of metabolism more than eating long-chain triglycerides. So let's stop right there, and what the heck is a medium-chain triglyceride? What does that even mean? Well, doctor?
It gets pretty scientific.
And why would that increase your metabolism?
Because our body seems to be able to metabolize medium chain triglycerides better than long chain. So what they're talking about, triglyceride is a molecule that has glycerin basically in the center of the molecule, and then it has these three fat chains attached to it, triglyceride. And so the fat chains are chains of carbon atoms. And so you can have short chain carbon atoms, you can have medium chain carbon atoms, you can have long chain carbon atoms. Most of the triglycerides are long, that occur naturally in nature, are long chain triglycerides. And so through research, they've determined that medium chain triglycerides, our body metabolizes those differently in terms of it can use that more easily as fuel. Burning fat as fuel is not what our body prefers, if I could use that analogy. It prefers to burn glucose for fuel. But in certain situations, let's say you're an endurance athlete and you burn through all your glycogen stores. Glucose is stored as glycogen in the liver and the muscles. And you burn through all the glycogen stores, then you will start burning fat. And that's one of the ways long-distance exercise or long-duration exercise can lead to fat loss, is that you start burning these fatty acids as fuels. And medium chain are metabolized easier than the long chain. And it's been popular in weightlifters. It's been touted as a way to build muscle better and to recover faster. It's been touted in weight loss industry as a way to boost your metabolism and therefore increase your weight loss. The problem is the studies aren't done with food. They're done with supplements.
So based on that, what you just said, I want to then read the next thing in his article. He says, the problem is Saint-Ange's research used a, quote, designer oil packed with 100% medium-chain triglycerides, and traditional coconut oil only contains 13 to 15% of these medium chains. And studies have showed that smaller doses of these MCTs do not help with weight loss.
That's correct.
So,
but most of these studies have been done in rats, too.
Right.
So, and studies done in rats can help us formulate an idea of how things work in the human body. But we're not rats, and we react differently to this stuff. And so this is emblematic of our use of nutritional research in the United States. So you take somebody that's published this research, and usually it's a supplement because you can't make money selling food.
Broccoli
or whatever, however else you're going to get your, you know, in nature you can get some of this through eating coconuts, a whole food.
But they're not touting coconuts. They're touting coconut oil, which I'm sure at this point in time is a billion-dollar industry.
I would be surprised if it's not. And then so you're touting coconut oil as a weight loss supplement.
Which everybody wants to lose weight.
Based on a study that was done with a supplement, not the coconut oil. It contained coconut oil, but it was totally changed and made to be 100% medium chain triglycerides. Now, I would suspect, I don't know, but I would suspect that if you did a little research, you could find this oil that the researcher used. It's sold as a supplement to and touted for weight loss in humans. But the study was done in rats, and two, it's a supplement and it's not real food. And, you know, time and time again, we've learned and relearned this lesson that supplements do not equal whole food in the health effects.
Well, and besides just the beyond the supplement idea, I mean, this just to me goes to oil in general, and we've talked about this multiple times, and we all, of course, always get asked the coconut oil question, even when we tell people over and over again, oil is not healthy, do not have oil, do not add oil to your diet. It is a highly processed food-like substance. It is not real food. And then inevitably someone says something about what about coconut oil. And, you know.
So the two oils we get asked the most about are olive oil and coconut oil.
Yes.
And coconut oil is highly saturated fat, one. And so in the coconut oil that's sold as coconut oil. So this is highly processed oil made from coconuts or from the tree. And then it has one of the highest saturated fat contents of any oil sold. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that can be said about our intake of saturated fat.
It says here the American Heart Association recommends eating no more than 6% of saturated fat as part of your total daily calories. Well, can you imagine, even if you ate 2 or 3 tablespoons of coconut oil a day?
Well, that would be a lot of saturated fat. And, you know, studies on saturated fat show that it lowers HDL, it raises LDL, and those are biomarkers that increase your risk of having heart disease. You got to realize that cholesterol does not necessarily equal heart disease. But when you're eating a diet and the diet you eat raises your LDL and lowers your HDL, it increases your risk of heart disease. Besides the fact that you've increased your LDL, what really drives heart disease is oxidated LDL. It is a fat that gets oxidized, and then that seems to cause a lot of the problem with how the artery deals with that. And so it calls in your immune system, and then you start, that oxidized LDL is what actually triggers the plaque formation.
That's very complicated.
Randy can make it more simple, I guess.
Well, to simplify it, you know, when the coconut oil argument or discussion comes up, it kind of reminds me of Dr. Oz, that, you know, first you had that Garcinia Cambogia that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the green coffee bean extract. And so it goes in cycles. Some things are what I call stickier, meaning they stick and patients or the general public kind of latches onto it. And that's where we are, I think, with coconut oil, that it said, you know, it lowers your cholesterol. It helps fight Alzheimer's and dementia. So it's this, you know, catch-all thing.
But besides that, I mean, I do, and I agree with what you're saying, but when you think about those other supplements you mentioned, so that's taking probably more like a pill form.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that people do buy into that for so long, and they might take that pill for a certain amount of time, but if they really don't see much result
sure.
from it, then they quit taking it, and that kind of goes by the wayside.
Right.
The thing I find that I think the reason why coconut oil has become so popular and has stayed that way is not, I mean, people might say it's because I heard it's good for my, you know,
dementia.
My dementia or heart disease for whatever, you know, because of these crazy studies. but coconut oil tastes good.
Right.
And they're using it in their coffee and their smoothies and cooking their vegetables, and they love it. So they want to believe why this is so healthy for them.
I don't think coconut oil tastes good.
Well, we don't eat oil. So of course not. But when you are eating oil in your diet, as you know from previous history, it coats your mouth. It completely changes the way you taste things. And we still eat tasty food. I don't want people to think that, but your taste buds change, you know, and so food tastes different to us now. But we don't like the taste of something heavily, you know, oily or anything like that. But the people that are eating that now are used to that, and they're finding that, oh, it's so good. And so that's why they want to keep that up.
It's like if some research came out that French fries, you know, were healthy and they fought dementia and they fought heart disease.
Yes.
People would just flock to them even more than they already do. And this reminds me of, like, you know, if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes
the truth. Yes, you know? There's no question.
And I think that's where we are with coconut oil now, because it has become such a huge hot topic in the nutritional supplement. You know,
and you have the guys that I like to really refer to as the ones that tout the pseudoscience.
Right.
Doctors, MDs, they're involved in the nutrition world. So, you know, what I found interesting was Dr. Joel Kahn, who is a cardiologist, came out and basically supported this paper's position that coconut oil is unhealthy, and he gets castigated on social media by all the pseudoscience doctors who are saying, well, you know, coconut oil has been shown to do this and it's been shown to do that. And it's typical of the state that we're in right now in terms of nutritional science.
And it's so frustrating to people. I can't tell you how many times I hear, but there's so much information about there and it's so contradictory and I don't know what to do, so therefore I'm just going to eat the coconut oil because it tastes good.
Well, that is true. And that, I think,
and that's what's frustrating to me, is that people are just getting bombarded.
I think the people that promote this want to keep it confusing, because the real science would say, well, that's one of the more unhealthy things you can put in your body. I mean,
well, it's one of the more unhealthy things you can put down your drain.
Well,
think about it. Do you want to put that down the drain of your sink?
No, it's okay to rub on
your skin. It'll clog your drain up. So if it's going to clog your drain, it ain't going to clog your arteries. I mean, I'm a simple guy.
I don't know if I could quite go that far, Randy.
I like to keep things simple.
Well, you know, it's just, to me, sometimes it's just look at the, go back to being simple, though, like you said, Randy. I mean, the other day I was making a coconut curry, or I wanted it to be coconutty. I was making a curry, and I love that coconutty flavor that you get from curries, like a Thai curry.
Mm-hmm.
And most all recipes call for a can of coconut milk to be in your curry. And so I did some research, because I didn't have any coconut milk, because it's not something that I buy. But 1 cup of canned coconut milk had 51 grams of saturated fat.
Wow.
1 cup.
Wow.
That's a heart attack in a can.
That's right.
And so my kind of my go-to to make things creamy, since we don't eat dairy, and I'm trying to, you know, avoid this much saturated fat, was I decided to take 1/2 cup of cashews and blend it with 1 cup of water to get a creamy, you know, liquid to mix into my curry. And 1/2 cup of cashews only had 4 grams of saturated fat. And so there's just such a vast difference. Plus, you know, I mean, just the calories alone would have been enticing to me. I mean, I can't even remember now the amount of calories that were in 1 cup. But if you can imagine, you know, 51 grams of fat, how many calories per gram? Like nine?
9 calories per gram.
Yeah, you're talking almost 500 calories. And I think it's like 120 calories for 1/4 or 1/2 cup of cashews. you know. So, I mean, that in and of itself. So, calories, you know. So, anyway, I just think I just wanted to touch base on this information that gets plugged out there and why people get so frustrated. And one of the websites that we recommend people go to when they have any kind of question about nutrition at all, and that maybe they want to fact check us or they want to learn more on their own when they're not, you know, having in one of our seminars where they can ask us a question, I always point them in the direction of nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Michael Greger runs this site. It's done purely on donations. It does not cost you anything to be a member of this site to get the information. But he has, it's a database of all of the research he's done on science-based nutrition, I guess.
He researches the research.
Yes.
Is be probably the best way to say that.
Yeah, so
what does he say?
He does all the research, yeah, so we don't have to.
He does all the reading, so we don't have to.
But what I like is, because there is so much research out there and people can design, I mean, the coconut oil example is a way that a study can be designed to get the intended result.
Absolutely. Well, there's no question about that.
Right. And again, we've talked about that when regards to eggs and cholesterol and how that study was and milk and everything, you know, there's just countless of them. But he makes sure he delves through all that and gets to the core of who is providing this research. Is it a true, what is it called, a placebo, double-blinded study to get this information. And so I highly trust what information he's putting out there. And he's got multiple videos on why coconut oil is not healthy and why soy is healthy, mm-hmm, and so on and so on. So I highly recommend going to his site and signing up, because if you sign up, you will get one of his videos emailed to you daily. It's the latest video on his latest research. And so to go along with this idea of confusing the public and this kind of research, the video today was actually very, very appropriate. And so I thought I'd share a little bit about that video. And he starts by talking about how Denmark introduced the world's first tax on saturated fat. And after only 15 months, the tax was abolished due to massive pressure from farming and food companies.
Of course.
Oh, really?
Of course.
You know, and I just don't think people realize the role that those companies and lobbyists play in the information that we get.
If only George McGovern were still alive, you could ask him.
Yes.
He has firsthand knowledge of that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, what these companies try to tout is what's, and I've heard this term used many times, is a nanny state, you know, like New York, because they tax the large sodas, mm-hmm, and stuff. And they say, well, you don't want a nanny state and the government telling you what to do. But then that goes along with, but what happens when these people are consuming all these sugary sodas and these saturated fats and getting sick, sick, sick? But then basically the state, somebody has to pay for the health care of these people because they are getting sick. And so, you know, at some point, you know, the cost does come back to you. And
sure,
so that's kind of his point in this article. But he also relates it to the tobacco industry. And he says the tobacco industry offers the classic example, touting, quote, personal responsibility, which has a certain philosophical appeal. As long as people understand the risks, they should be free to do whatever they want to do with their bodies. Which I agree, mm-hmm, with to a certain extent, yes. But nobody's getting the right information is the problem.
So nobody's able to truly make an informed consent.
You can't make a decision if you don't know the facts. And that even goes to, you know, heart procedures and all of the, you know, the
sure,
other things that we've talked about getting, you know, a bypass, which, you know, you didn't have a bypass 8 years ago because you looked up the statistics and you found an alternative way with reading the science.
That's correct. And, you know, not to belittle my cardiology colleagues, mm-hmm, but, you're in a very powerless situation when a doctor says, well, you know, I think you need to have triple bypass, because basically that's a life or death decision. But all the facts of that bypass aren't necessarily weighed correctly. And, you know, the fact that there is an alternative to treatment, and that the standard treatment being, if you have a significant blockage that's causing symptoms, then you're either going to get a stent or a bypass. But the alternative treatment's not discussed. And so people aren't truly making informed decisions, because they're not given the information that within 2 weeks you can basically heart attack proof you yourself by quit consuming the things that cause the heart disease.
Sure.
But most people and doctors think, well, it's genetic. And so how can you change your genetics? And so you're destined to require this. The science says, well, very little of it is genetic, and that, yeah, you can change your heart attack risk in a very short period of time, and you start clearing up the disease in a short period of time if you quit feeding the disease and you start fighting it with the
but
food.
But even if it is genetic, you can stop it from progressing.
Except in maybe a couple of circumstances. So there are, I mean, I don't want to say it's all or nothing.
Sure.
Because there are a few examples of where medicine is indicated in certain genetic problems, and I don't want to get into the detail because it gets really complicated in terms of the cholesterol stuff. But there are a couple of genetically passed on diseases where diet alone is probably not going to take care of it, but it's few and far between.
Well, we're going to get back to that in just a second here. We're going to take a short break. But if you are listening and, you have any questions, when we come back, we can take your calls at 672-1220. We'll be back in shortly. Okay, we are back. We are Plant-Based OKC here talking with you today. Again, if you have any questions, 672-1220, we'd love to hear from you. We have been talking about coconut oil and saturated fat and misleading information from the media or designed studies that keep us confused. And I'm going to go back real quick to this video today from Dr. Michael Greger at nutritionfacts.org. And you know, he said, how confused are we about nutrition? Head Start teachers are responsible for providing nutrition education to over 1 million low-income children every year. And in some research done with those teachers, not a single one could answer 5 questions correctly regarding nutrition.
All 5. They gave them a test.
Yes, they gave them a test, and they could not answer all 5 questions.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Correctly.
Well, how are they
going to get their information? Same exactly place we get it. And everyone's confused. And it's just, you know, and he keeps, you know, relaying it back to, you know, the tobacco industry. And we've said this many times too. I mean, when you think about back in the 50s and 60s and how popular smoking was, and, you know, we think it's crazy now when you look back at the ads promoting cigarette smoking. And one of the things he says in here is that, I guess, the government told the tobacco industry they had to put out one commercial telling the facts about smoking for every 4 commercials they put out to promote tobacco. And they opted to quit marketing tobacco altogether because they knew that that one commercial telling the truth would ruin anything else they could do, so they just opted just not to do anything. Now, how scary is that?
Well,
and I just, you know, it'd be interesting if, you know, what if the processed food industry or the processed meat industry, now that the World Health Organization has stated that processed meats are a class 1 carcinogen.
Correct.
What if when, you know, you had a bacon commercial, it had to put a disclaimer that bacon causes
colorectal cancer.
So One thing that really surprised me was, as you all know, I was on a cruise last week with my children. And when we were in these different ports, I guess in different countries now, I don't notice cigarettes here in America, but on cigarette packages and on cigarette cartons, they have a big label now that says smoking kills.
Really?
So they've kind of abandoned the whole, you know,
may cause
cancer. And they're,
well, I think the science now pretty well states that smoking does kill.
Right.
As does the science of processed meat.
Sure.
I mean, the World Health Organization now, this last week, the American Medical Association came out and said that hospitals should stop serving food that causes cancer. The AMA.
Right.
Which
mean,
is the American right. Medical Association.
This right. is a monumentous statement by right. an organization that is funded in large part by big ag.
Agriculture, sure.
And big pharma.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to come out and say that, it just blew me away. And they also said that all hospitals should provide a plant-based menu to their patients. Should be
that's
available.
Big. Yeah, that's big.
It's huge. And so, you know, we really are in the 1950s and 60s in relating food and tobacco because the information is starting to get out. You know, I think it was 1964 that the Surgeon General came out and said smoking could be dangerous, which started the whole process. But I think it took like 7,000 studies, according to Michael Greger, that showed the harm of tobacco before the Surgeon General would be willing to step out on that limb and say, you know, this could be bad for you. It didn't even say it was bad for you.
The first 50 wouldn't do it.
No, we have to have a lot more studies than that before.
Well, Michael says, what, 6,000 studies didn't count?
That's right. Well, the thing that really amazes me about cigarette smoking is when I see people, like, on the ship, they have a casino, and so then there's people smoking in there.
And they do have a designated smoking area on the deck, I know, right. in the ships we've been on in the past.
That you see people that might be 60 or 70 years old smoking, and I kind of go, well, I get it. You know, you've been smoking your whole life. You started back when your doctor told you it was good for you. But, you know, you see people, like, in their 30s smoking, and I'm just shocked thinking.
There's a river in Egypt.
That's right. That's right.
That people love to sail down.
That's right.
And not just with tobacco, but with food.
Yeah. And I mean,
denial is such a powerful motivator.
Yeah, but how do you deny the science on cigarette smoking? That
well, how do you deny the science on bacon?
Because not 100% of the people that
smoke die
sure. of sure. Lung cancer.
No, that's you're exactly right.
I mean, and the person doing that behavior, it says it's not going to be me.
Right.
And that's the same way with bacon and processed meats. I mean, not 100% of the people that eat bacon are going to die of
correct.
Colon cancer.
Right.
But I heard, and I don't even know where I heard this, but I think it's like if you eat bacon or another processed food one time a day, you have an 18% increased chance of colorectal cancer.
Neil Barnard put that out.
Yeah, and then if you have it, say you have bacon for breakfast, but then you have a ham sandwich at mm-hmm. lunch, and then
hot dog
at a baseball game or whatever, you've now tripled that 18%,
right.
whatever 18 times 3. You now have that high of a risk of getting colorectal cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is scary. Like I just don't understand why it's still kind of a, people like to throw it in my face a lot, especially with bacon. Bacon seems to be the number one.
You can
one
take away anything. Don't take
away
my
bacon. Yeah. They throw it away.
The smell of bacon alone
you
makes
know,
me salivate.
They want to dangle it in your face and say, mm-hmm. don't you want to eat this? It's so good.
Yes, I'll be honest. Yes, I want to eat it.
I do too.
No, I'm not going to.
I want to do a lot of things that I don't do.
I mean, I want to bungee jump.
I wanted to jump off that ship just to see what happened.
I know, and I don't know why bacon has. And I mean, I watched like the morning news shows, you know, and every day there's a cooking segment, and almost I would venture to say 2 to 3 times a week that cooking segment includes
bacon.
So, you know, cooking bacon. So they cook it in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the smell permeates all over the area. So the smell of bacon in the air contains nitrosamines. And so people with reactive airway disease, that nitrosamine triggers a reaction as you breathe it in, and it can cause emphysema alone, just by itself. So can you imagine the risk of somebody that cooks bacon every day?
Yeah, those workers in restaurants.
Sure, or in our hospital. Our hospital cooks bacon every day.
Right.
And the damage, besides eating it, the damage done to the bacon just because of what's in the air is pretty significant.
I want to see what's going to happen to a hospital, though, even just from a patient satisfaction standpoint, if you take away bacon and fried chicken.
Well, that's the reason why they don't do it. I mean, because they would be berated on their surveys.
And they get paid.
And they get paid by having, 100%
satisfaction.
You've got to
be above 90% satisfaction to get. And these things are tracked by CMS, which is, Medicare.
Right.
And so it will affect their, or it could possibly affect their reimbursement. I think as patients become more knowledgeable about the harmful effects,
I think that will change, and they will get bad patient surveys because they don't have healthy options.
I do too.
You know, so I do think that the tide will change, and it's coming.
Well, it's changing in terms of nutrition and in surgery, because there are several studies now that show that malnutrition. Now, most
that doesn't mean being skinny.
That does not mean being skinny. That means not having proper nutrition for your body to function causes a huge increase in risk of postoperative complications.
And you can be very well fed and be malnourished.
Oh, absolutely. That's us. Yeah. United States to a T.
Yes. Yeah, so if your diet consists of highly processed junk foods from,
chips, Coke,
crackers, cookies,
buttered popcorn,
all that, and then, you know, McDonald's and Taco Bell and Kentucky Fried Chicken and pizza and you name it, you're not getting any nutrition. You're getting calories, but you're not getting nutrition.
Well, I anticipate that there'll be a big change because now hospitals are being reimbursed for their basically success rate on certain surgical procedures. So like total knees and total hip replacements. Now the government is pushing for one payment to include the hospital, the anesthesiologist, the surgeon.
Mm.
And then if the patient gets readmitted, the hospital has to eat that bill.
Wow.
So let's just a couple of years down the road where this gets in full effect, you take somebody that has a BMI of 40, mm-hmm. and
which
you're going to do
body mass index.
Right.
And that 40 is very high. It's not nearly as high as the highest I've seen.
Right.
Recently, there was a patient that had a BMI of 69. But you take that patient and they need a knee or hip replacement, who's going to do the surgery?
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
Because you can't afford the risk.
You can't intubate his head. You can't lift
his
head.
Well, besides intubation, but the risk of complication that you're going to be responsible for now.
Right.
And the hospital and the surgeons share that responsibility. Nobody's going to do that surgery.
Right. No, you're right.
And that may force people to become more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of factors that are coming down the pike that will impact this whole movement of just eating healthier in general. And I tell people all the time, even if you cook your own meals, 9 times out of 10, you're going to cook healthier food than you're going to if you eat out and you eat a lot of processed junk. Just start cooking real food. And so I'll kind of touch base on that real quick. When we tell people we eat a whole food plant-based diet, they were like, well, what do you eat? What's left out there to eat? And so, basically our diet consists of grains, beans, vegetables, fruits, seeds, and nuts.
Well, I've heard grains and beans are bad for you.
Because they're high in carbohydrates, right?
Well, no, this thing called phytic acid.
Oh, right? I don't know about phytic acid.
It's supposed to be really bad for the body. That's one of the arguments about not eating grains. Phytic acid literally means plant acid.
Mm-hmm.
Phytate in anything connotates plant. There's phytic acid in everything. You cannot get away from it.
Sure.
It does cause a slight decrease in absorption of minerals. But there are certain things that we tend to eat with the high phytate foods that counteracts that. Like, who's ever cooked just a pot of beans and not had onions in it? I mean, maybe it's done, but not very often. Or at least you put some onion powder in it. Well, the onion powder totally counteracts the action of the phytates in the beans themselves. And phytic acid is very health-promoting for your intestines. And it actually fights colon cancer. But, you know, the gist of some of these pseudo-nutrition experts say that phytic acid is bad for you. They take one little study that showed that it decreased mineral absorption.
Right.
And then it's this whole thing that it's really bad for you.
Most people that I talk to that don't want to eat beans don't want it because they say it makes them gassy. And the reason is because beans are nothing but fiber. And right. When you eat the standard American diet, it has about zero fiber.
Sure.
And so now if you do switch to this diet in the beginning, you may find yourself a little uncomfortable at times, but all of that will pass over time and that will get better. But, and you know, maybe you need to introduce those foods, you know, slowly if you are really susceptible to that. I don't feel like we really have a problem with that.
Or take, you know, some gas reducer.
Gas X or Beano or whatever.
And the other argument I hear about grain, you know, the grain thing. Nobody wants to eat grains because they are so, they classify them as carbohydrates and will make you fat.
Right.
And I think there's, you know, huge difference. We're talking unrefined grains.
Right.
Unrefined carbohydrates. So not white bread or white flour. I'm not going to put white rice in that category because I still think that's somewhat of a whole food.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking, you know, quinoa and rice, all kinds of different rice, and there's so many different grains out there that are health-promoting.
There's a book called Grain Brain.
And I've not read that because...
Well, it has a little bit of science and a lot of conjecture.
Propaganda.
And propaganda. Same thing with Wheat Belly. It has a little bit of science and a lot of just nonsense, for want of a better word. But these books have been highly promoted by their authors. And, you know, media loves anything that's controversial. So these guys are going around the country promoting how bad wheat is and how bad grains are. And the public doesn't know the truth of the matter.
Well, we get hit a lot with, doesn't it have to do with the way wheat is grown today versus the way it was grown so many years ago, and that the way it's grown today is upsetting the digestive system? And is that because of the GMO and the pesticides that are used in raising grain today?
Well, they've actually looked at that, and wheat today, yeah, it is a little different. It's not substantially different from, you know, 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So what could factor into this problem with digesting wheat? Well, I think it has more to do with what's called the leaky gut syndrome, which I think is caused by all the antibiotics. One of the things that causes it, not all, but not the sole cause of it, but one of the things that causes it are the antibiotics that people consume on a regular basis
from the
eating
animal
meat.
Yeah, so it's not the grains that are causing the digestive issues. It's actually the animal protein and all of the antibiotics they're ingesting that have been used in these animals.
Yes, up to 89% of all antibiotic use in the United States is animal agriculture. Sure. That causes a lot of these resistant bacteria that we're seeing. I mean, the most common cause of a recurrent UTI infection is from E. coli contamination from eating chicken.
Right.
And that affects way more women than men, but it's the contaminated chicken that causes it. Well, you can't eat chicken that doesn't have antibiotics in it.
Well, unless you, I guess if you raise your own
chicken, maybe, but.
Well, the problem is a lot of chicken feed, unless they're eating, you know, the bugs and stuff. If you're feeding your chickens, you're feeding them antibiotics as well.
Right. You know, when you talk about grain brain and wheat belly, those are just books that have become so popular because people love to hear information that just reinforces their bad habits. You know, we love to hear more science or pseudoscience that says that it's okay to eat meat, that it's okay to eat bacon, that we shouldn't be eating, you know, grains and wheat and things
like
that.
Well, and usually people lose weight because they then quit eating things like bagels and donuts and bread. And so they stay away from those. And so, yeah, you lose weight, but, you know.
One other thing that I pointed this out to my children. So, you know, people think that it's just an impossibility to eat smart or healthy on a cruise ship. And I say, you know, it was as easy as going to any restaurant,
right,
you know.
Right.
I had things like fruit and oatmeal for breakfast, and I'd have a salad or something like that for lunch. And then for dinner, the people were extremely accommodating. The very first night, the waitress asked me, you know, because I ordered the vegetarian meal and mm-hmm. asked her if there was any dairy in it. Oh, no. And so one of the things that I pointed out to my children was, look at the people that are working on this ship versus the people that are vacationing on this ship. Obviously, they're all typically foreign from India, Indonesia, Asian countries, and they're not overweight. And guess what? They're living on this ship with us.
Yeah.
They're just not eating the same food, the same type of food, the same amount of food.
Well, amount of food, too.
Yeah.
I think that's key.
Yeah,
I mean,
on cruises, it's a 24-hour buffet.
It's just a 24-hour feeding fest.
So one morning, the gentleman brought my oatmeal, and he sat it down, and he said, "Oatmeal, that's all you're having?" And I said, "Yes." And then I kind of pulled him aside, and I said, "I eat like you eat. I don't eat like Americans eat." And he started chuckling a little bit, and he said, "I'm 60 years old." And he looked like he was about 40. And he, you know, he looked like he weighed about 150 pounds. So, you know, it's just, if you want to be healthy more than you want to eat a cheeseburger, you'll.
And I think that's the mindset people have to get wrapped around.
Right.
You know, is it that you want to die longer or you want to live longer?
And
we promote
thrive.
Living longer.
That's right.
And
live
and thriving.
And thriving longer, for sure.
Yeah.
So, if you're interested in more about what we are talking about today, please go to our website, plantbasedokc.com. And we have a caller?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Hi, it's Susan in Chicago.
Well, listen to who that is. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
We're great. Good.
We're doing wonderful.
I couldn't help but join in the conversation about traveling and trying to eat vegan and...
Yes.
But some of the challenges that arise and just kind of how easy it can be, though, too, on the other hand. I mean, I'm probably like all of you. I always have snacks with me everywhere
yes.
I go,
yes.
and nuts or bars or something here and there. But, you know, it is challenging. I have to admit, you go places and, you know, if you have the oatmeal, you always have to make sure it doesn't have milk in it. A lot of people like to put milk in that when they
right.
make it rather
right.
than water. And I'm finding some places I have been doing a little biking here and there and going up to Wisconsin and staying in these towns and these small, you know, Wisconsin's a challenging place to go where you're not going to find a whole lot of soy milk up there.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just have to bring a cooler, but most of the continental breakfasts that you go to have packets of oatmeal, so you just have the water and there's always fruit and,
right.
you know, I agree. I mean, you don't have to eat these massive quantities of food and at every meal, and you know, I know what Randy was saying, how we don't eat like Americans, like the typical American.
Sure.
So I think it's just people really just have to have that mindset, and they have to really want to do it, and they have to understand the health benefits and see what is all behind there and the benefits. And the more and more people that you talk to that are on these types of diets and the way that the health benefits that we all have from doing this,
mm-hmm.
I think more and more people are starting to kind of open their eyes. Or, you know, I'm glad when I'm with friends and they say, you know, I'm not going to eat. I gave up meat for dinner and I'm or breakfast
right.
or lunch or just one meal a day.
Right.
It's a start. It's a start.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I do find when we travel, we're finding more and more options in airports and stuff where, you know, we can sit down and get a decent meal. That is, we had a really great arugula and beet salad with seared tofu that was real fancy in this, you know, airport restaurant. I was just shocked. And it was delicious, and
mm-hmm.
even the waitress was like, man, that looks really good.
Right.
It's probably the first time she's ever served it.
Sure,
right,
sure.
Right.
Sure.
But yeah, I do think it takes a little bit more effort to seek out those things when you are traveling, and you have to, you know, can't be afraid to ask for certain things or substitutions, and I find that people are very accommodating and willing to help us with that, and being prepared ourselves by having certain things with us always helps. And but it's worth it to me because we feel so energetic, and we, you know, just I think it's just worth it.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
feel like I'm missing out on anything.
I don't feel like I'm missing
well,
out.
Well, you're missing out on
diabetes.
I am
obesity.
Missing out on that.
That's right. That's right.
Susan, so. Thanks for calling us.
Of course. Good to talk to you all.
You
absolutely.
Too.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks. So, again, just follow us at plantbasedokc.com. If you want to learn more about our wellness events, those are all listed there. They're free of charge.
We're going to be at Rococo Monday night.
Monday night is our,
July
like we
3rd.
Said, it's the first Monday of every month. So this coming Monday, we'll be at Rococo, 6 o'clock p.m.
We're going to set off fireworks in the parking lot.
No, we aren't.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Oh, I thought
we're having hot dogs and chili?
No,
we're not.
No.
That was another thing.
So please join us Monday night if you're interested. And we are also on Facebook and Instagram at Plant-Based OKC on both of those.
Right.
So you can follow us and get good recipe meal ideas. So we would love to have you on there. And then we will be back on the fourth Tuesday of August.
Which is July 25th.
Or, I mean, of July. Yeah, I'm
yes.
way ahead of myself. July yes. 25th. We
yes.
will be back here for FYI. So, as Kathy would say, live life on purpose and with purpose.
You finally got that right.
I did.
That's right. Goodbye, everybody.